You're listening to Alan Hahn's Knicks Fix Podcast, exclusively on the ESPN New York app.
Hello, and welcome to the Knicks Fix Podcast. I'm your host, Alan Hahn, and we will have a Game 6. Back to Miami we go as the Knicks staved off elimination with a huge Game 5 win at the Garden. We stay alive for at least one more game, Bart Scott.
Staying alive. Bro, I tell you what, man. These people that play for the Knicks. God,
they these make people. I mean, who are these people? Like, these,
yeah, exactly, man. They get on. They are so frustrating.
What
I mean,
that?
They make some dumb plays at the worst. I mean, Grimes dribbling into a double team. Hey, let everybody run down. It's easy to W when you having to let the people that's clearing out clear out. Turnover. And it's just like, man, what are we doing with these bad possessions? If Miami would have stayed hot hitting their shots from the outside, it would have been a different story. And listen, what I tell people all the time, what can make you lose when you win goes swept under the rug because you're filled with the joy of getting the end result that you want. But the same things that you do that makes you win that you do during a win can make you lose. So sometimes when you win, you lose. So they need to understand that what they did at the end of that game and closing that game out, if it's a tight game and if it's a one-point game and if you perform like that and have those mental errors coming down the stretch, turnovers, that'll make you lose. It's about executing in the most pivotal times of a game. And I just – it goes back to basketball acumen. I mean, it's like, man, like they got the win, and I am so happy that they got the win. But damn, they make some dumb decisions just as professional athletes thinking the game and understanding what the opponent is going to do. And, I mean, listen, I'm happy that Mitchell Robinson was able to make his shots down the stretch. But, man, they could have lost that game. And, you know, big up to Grimes, big up to Brunson, 48 minutes. We've seen Kevin Durant do that, doing what's necessary. Who cares how tired you are as long as you got enough to finish? I don't know if Jimmy Buckets in Miami is going to give you only 19 points. They got to tighten up. If they want to have this dream scenario, and I think out of all the teams that were facing 3-1, I think they have just as good of a chance as any. But this game six, it's going to be a whole nother level of effort. And hopefully Brunson and Grimes should be fine. I don't care about Grimes. He's young enough. Who cares? I'm not, I have no empathy for him. But, you know, these guys got to rest up, hydrate, do what's right. Whether we see you or not, do what's right so that we can make sure that we can force a game seven. But I'm happy about the result. But, man, Miami gets some of the most wide open Duncan Robinson. Like, what are we doing? How are you coming off of Duncan Robinson? Like, the dude is on fire. I'm through. I just hate, like, I'm thinking I can go enjoy my dessert last night. And I spit it out. Like, man, what, are you kidding me? Once I saw him dribbling to a double team, like, what is this, high school? We don't know how to break a press? Jeez.
Bart.
Damn, they had a heart attack.
You make me so happy right now. You know why you make me happy? Because you sound like a Knicks fan. Because that's literally what it feels like.
It's like, damn.
You could,
why got to be so hard?
So good about a team and the performances you're getting, effort you're getting.
Yes.
The way the building sounded. Like, all the stuff that – I mean, especially after that first quarter where it just – first quarter, I was, like, already making vacation plans. Like, all right, I'm not going to be busy on Friday. But then, obviously, it turns around. Most important thing is that you just always know with the Knicks, it's never easy. When you're playing the Heat, it's never easy. And so you never can expect easy. But I do want to point out, before we get into like all the stuff that happened with the game and what it could mean going forward and all that stuff, is let's just take a moment and recognize that Jalen Brunson last night gave you a performance that was one of the best that we've seen from a Knicks point guard in the history of its franchise. In the playoffs. I mean, you have to, there's a very, very short list of players who have done what he did in an elimination game last night. The fact that he went from start to finish without ever coming out of the game. The fact that he did that while being picked up 94 feet with pressure defense by Gabe Vincent, by Caleb Martin, by Kyle Lowry, who you know was probably you know, rabbit punching him the entire time down the floor. And somehow the officials never see it. So, and then carrying the offense the way he did, making big shots. Like, that's an exhausting game. Quentin Grimes played 48 minutes as well. He had to guard Jimmy Butler a lot. And so that's also equally exhausting. But at least on offense, Quentin Grimes wasn't asked to do too much.
Right.
Jalen Brunson was
offense,
asked to
get
do,
into the paint.
Jalen Brunson was asked to do everything and did it.
He needs a raise.
And helped him win. Well, I was saying, go back to last summer and those who felt the Knicks overpaid for Jalen Brunson.
And that was me. That was me too.
Oh, there are a lot of people that said it. You know, you're giving this guy $120 million. You're giving this guy $1 million. This is your big free agent signing?
Worth every dime.
Every dime. And you really look at it, and like I'm telling you, this is not a guy who's, you know, he's a really good player. I said it last night at MSG. I said it with my chest, but I'm willing to take anybody else's suggestion to tell me I'm wrong. Jalen Brunson is the best player in the NBA today who has never been named to an all-star team or all-NBA team.
Man, stretch that chest like a peacock, say.
But I'm saying he is the best player in the league who has never been named to all-star or all-NBA.
Yeah.
I defy you to find me a player who's never been an all-star or never been an all-NBA player who you would say is better than him.
I mean, you talk about grit. I'm talking about leadership. I'm talking about everything. Man.
All of it. All of it.
Man, he got so much Chauncey Billups up in him, dog.
It's a great comp.
He got that dog
in him. It's a great comp, man.
It's like a good comp. Oh, he's not the fastest. He's not the biggest. Man, but does he have some cojones. He got
heart.
He got, yep. Shane Falco.
Lion
that's
heart.
That's my new nickname for. Don't you know that man gonna kill you, Lionheart? Wrong bet. Told you, man, 50-50. It's all on the teller.
And they were still hitting him left and right. They were still trying to find ways to rattle him. And, I mean, Eric Spoelstra, even after the game. I mean, listen to Eric Spoelstra after the game because this tells you all you need to know. Because Spo, like, they talked about it, the tip of the spear, the head of the snake, all the different ways you want to describe what they consider Jalen Brunson in this offense. Spo, the whole thing is about taking him out of the game, and the Heat couldn't do it.
Yeah, he has a great competitive will, you know, so he's going to continue, you know, to attack. He's going to continue to try to manipulate defense. He's aggressive. He's physical, but he also knows how to, you know, draw fouls, and he's clever, you know, so he has that combination. You have to respect him as a competitor and then find a way to get the job done.
You know what he just described, Bart?
A Heat?
Yes.
That's the greatest compliment anybody.
Yes.
Like when Mike Mike Tomlin was like, "Yo, you could have played for the Steelers."
Yeah.
That's like the ultimate compliment because you know what it is to be a Steeler,
right?
Like you got to be a badass. So what he's saying is he's smart, he's manipulative.
Yeah,
he know how to do all the little Jedi mind tricks and pick
yep.
the files like me, and he's tough. Man, he like Devontae Freeman. This dude out there, he like a little tailback, man.
But what Spo just said there, right, is that he's not beating us with, like, supreme
skill.
Athleticism.
It's not skill, yeah, yeah.
Or ridiculous talent. Like, this guy's one of us. And yep. that's exactly what it is. And as I told you,
he's
these are mirror images.
Goblin.
These franchises have always been mirror images when it comes to when they've been successful, is that they play the same way. It's that same kind of toughness way.
And you think Ravens,
Tom Thibodeau, right, Steelers-Ravens. It's a perfect example. And you don't think Tom Thibodeau looks at what Spo has on his team and he's like, man, I need more of that.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
need more guys like that are willing to do whatever it takes. And you know who showed up? And I'll give you some examples. Remember I said that the Knicks don't have enough guys that are willing to do the things that the Heat players are willing to do.
Mm-hmm.
That changed. Like, now I'm going to take it forward. Because people are out. I was on Get Up again this morning, and they're asking, you know, can
yo,
the
yo,
Knicks
yo.
Do this?
First of all, let's pause for the Get Up outfit today.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
What's the matter?
I was feeling it. I was feeling the pink sitting on the little pocket square. I was so proud.
Matchy,
you know what I'm
matchy.
Saying?
Yeah.
You look like a Zaddy. You like the leader of the Zaddies. Like, not only am I a Zaddy, I'm the Zaddy president.
I'm the president of the club.
Man, yeah.
I'm not just a member.
Yeah, man. You had people like daughters like, hey, who's that? Like, hey, hold on. He's half your age. Like, hey, I like him mature.
Listen, I'm glad you said that because Kenny and Carlin
First of all, we can go suit for suit, outfit for outfit with that pair. and we Gucci.
Oh, no, I'm not even worried about our comparison. I'm just saying that they called me out.
Yeah, so disrespectful.
Because I decided to go two buttons down again. And I need a ruling. If I can get a ruling here real quick. And you could add, you know, again, at Bart Hahn. Two buttons down. Why is that so faux pas? What's the issue with the two buttons down? The one button feels like I'm wearing like this Oxford, but I didn't want to wear a tie and I should
and
be wearing khakis.
And it
like
spreads.
That second button, like it, you know,
it
it's
spreads.
A little
it's
classier.
Spreads. Yeah, it spreads.
And they're telling me like that, oh, it's dangerous territory. And
Now, it's dangerous if you have a big mix session. You know what I mean? I think if we pulled the shirts off, I would think you have the flatter stomachs of both parties in question. So you know what I mean? You know what I mean? So you can pull that off, and you're tall enough like Chris is. You're tall enough. Like now, like me and Chris, we got to go with the one button because we need some slack right around by the love handles just a bit. You know what I'm saying? Hmm. So that's really what it is. Traditionally, like they wouldn't say that if it was a double-breasted suit because you button all the double-breasted suits.
Yeah,
now, traditionally, like you go with one button, but you can pull off both. That's the flexibility of you being 6'6".
In the shirt, though.
They're
talking about my shirt.
Oh, man, if they don't get the Lewis Riddick the hell up out of here.
Lewis Riddick, like I was, first of all.
Our boy that was hosted.
Ryan Smith hosts. He always does two buttons down. Now,
they get
Richard Jefferson does three buttons down.
Yes.
That's a different club that I'm not really interested in going to.
Yeah, that's Magnum P.I. That's Sonny and Tubbs from Miami Vice. That's like dangerous territory because you can almost see your heartbeat.
Yeah, you don't need to see that. I don't need to see that.
You know what two is?
You.
Two is like, I'm confident. Two is I get on this damn Peloton every day.
Thank you. Two,
you know what I'm
saying? I'm proud of the work that I put in. I manicure well. So
yes.
You know, like they're bringing up taco meat and undershirts, and I'm going, first things first. You go two buttons down, you ain't wearing
an
undershirt.
You can't have an undershirt unless you got the extreme V-neck.
You need like the plunging V-neck.
And basically you just got on the shirt to make sure that if it's any moisture there, it's a moisture barrier so you don't sweat through your shirt.
Yeah, but you're not wearing an undershirt under a dress shirt like that. Like the material of that dress shirt was not – you didn't need an undershirt.
See, they got more man cleavers than you, so they don't understand those principles.
There's that part of it too. I think there's that part of it too.
And
so,
really,
you're cool with it. You don't have a problem.
What?
Because I felt attacked today.
Come on, man. I was so proud. Listen, if you weren't married, you know what I mean? I know when you get home, wifey, she going to tell you to put the suit on. Put it back on so I can take it off.
I've been
you know
really
what I'm
trying.
We only leader of the Zaddies. Yeah, we only, listen, we're audience of one. But back to basketball.
Took a little diversion there. But let me just, so let me make the other point now. So we talked about with the Knicks how they needed more guys willing to do the things. Like, again, fight. The Heat are going to test you. We're going to fight you. We're going to punch you. We're going to shove you. We're going to flop. We're going to do all these things, and we're going to test and see, can you handle it? And I said that the Knicks didn't have enough guys on the bus willing to do all that stuff, and the Heat did. Jalen obviously has always been that guy. Josh Hart has been that guy as well. But you know who showed up? You mentioned one of them, Quentin Grimes. Quentin Grimes playing defense on one leg.
Oh, with the steel,
son. He said he sprained his knee and that he was down. And if he stayed down or if he couldn't get – like, you would understand it because that –
If he'd have put a Julius Randle and just laid there and they would have been 5-on-4 and
they
got that point.
But he gets up and he's like, no, I'm getting it right. I ain't no bell.
Hey, yo, Mick, I ain't going down no more.
And so he gets in front of Jimmy Butler, who's the scariest guy on the floor to defend – and he gets the steal. Are you kidding me?
Clean, too. Like, you're talking about scouting report and studying.
He probably saw whatever the move was. He read it. And you know the Grinch story? How on this day, the Grinch's heart grew 3 sizes larger, right? Well, on this day, Quentin Grimes, you know what, grew 3 sizes larger on that play. That says a lot about that dude.
So you're saying he went to the Wizard and realized – before he got to the Wizard, he had already shown that he had developed a heart. Oh, that's poetic.
You realize that he's got that in him, and I like that.
Well, I always knew that he had some King Kong marbles.
But you wanted to see it.
Yeah.
And we saw it. And that's okay. There's another guy in the bus now. Now the bus is starting to fill up, Bart. And that's why when I looked at Game 6, now I'll give you another name. And this guy, you know, he's gotten some heat. I've given him some heat. Everybody has. But little by little, what are we learning about him? And I said this to him last night when I interviewed him. I said, you're somebody, what we're learning is that as a series goes on, that you get education pretty quickly. That you see, oh, okay, I see what's going on. Okay, and then you make your adjustments. And by the end of the series, you are taking advantage of things that you didn't even know in the first game. And what we saw out of R.J. Barrett last night is this is a Duke education. Like, this guy, he picks up everything, and he did the two can play at that game when it came to hooking your arm and drawing fouls and flopping. Like, and I'm not
get,
saying,
didn't
like,
he get,
ugly
didn't
flops.
He get Lowry with the banana in the tailpipe?
He got
Lowry, right?
He got Lowry once. He got, I think, Martin on one where he just kind of, like, he chicken-winged his arm, threw his hands up, and drew a foul. Like, the little stuff like that.
Yeah, thanks for
that
teaching
are just
you guys.
Tricks of the trade. Yeah, and he's thanks like, I'm watching me. Film, and I see these dudes, and I'm like, well, all right, but they're going to get – I can do that too. And he started doing it. This is a 22-year-old, the youngest player on the team, and he's got that savvy that he has picked up. Now, he did it in the Cavs series, finding ways that he can get to the basket with those big trees trying to block his shot. And now in this series, he's starting to see, oh, I see how these games work. I see these tricks, and I can do them too. And I thought he had a tremendous, like a low-key, tremendous game, R.J. Barrett did, for the Knicks. And so when you're asking me, which I know is all the questions we're going to get, is what does this mean? Did they just save face? I had a friend of mine call me or text me on the drive back from Get Up. And he said, I'm satisfied now. We can lose now in game six, and I'm okay now that it wasn't at home in game five. And I was like, oh, no. No, no, it ain't.
That's about winning one.
This ain't over now. What I saw last night was what I needed to see to start that belief process in my head of, oh, okay, now that I see more guys on the bus, I feel like Friday night is going to be a very interesting game. I believe the Knicks can push this to a seventh game.
All the pressure
because of what I saw.
Yeah,
I think you're right, but again, yes, they made a bunch of threes, and yes, all of a sudden, like, it was a game when it shouldn't have been, and you feel like it was white knuckle to the end, but that's just how these things
go. That's playoffs.
But I feel like what Brunson showed you, what Grimes showed you, what Barrett showed you,
yeah,
what even Mitchell Robinson showed me at the foul line where he has melted down before.
Yeah, man.
It's like, okay,
yo, he
are on the bus now.
And I text you. I was like, man, this dude got no art. I mean, he throws a fastball, man.
Who gets an ovation for free throws, really?
Like, bro, take a little speed off the fastball, bro. That thing get there so damn fast.
It looks like he's literally
straight
throwing
line.
It. Right. Like he's like Garrett Cole with the spin rate. He's
like,
just
yo, what are we doing? Are we trying to throw the football through the hole? Like, bruh. Put a little arc on. I'm happy.
He made four of them. That's
yeah. Nice. And they went to the hacker. See, but those are the little things that I talk about Spoelstra, him knowing the situation, and them going to a hacker Mitch.
Oh yeah, but listen.
Well, let's not because I'm not on yet. I'm gonna see your beautiful husky eyes in a minute. But I'm sure New York wants to talk.
They do. 800-919-3776 is the number, of course. And you know, I mean, there's a lot to react to with this, but I just want to – Bart gave his take. And you could see, I love the fact that Bart spoke like a fan.
They've drawn me in.
I love Hart. I love that. I love it. I dig that about you, baby. I got you in now.
Every time I'm out.
I wanted everybody to know before we take calls, because there's always going to be the frustrations and everything else. And oh, by the way, did you see that Evan Fournier was not available because of an illness?
Like, come on, bro.
I mean, everybody wanting Fournier to play and Fournier to play, and then you're like, oh, he can't play. He's sick.
He's like, oh, I got my bowel movements all messed up. Scared. Don't call on me. Scared to death.
But I just wanted to get that point out about what I saw in the game, because there are flaws. There's always going to be flaws. It's a grit and grind series with a team that's going to fight you and just make it ugly. But I'm just letting you know that the most important thing I saw last night was guys on the bus. And there were not guys on the bus in game three, but they're on the bus now. And so all you want to see now is go back to the scene of the crime where they know they gave one away in game three. And in game four, they just weren't good enough. But they know. They go down there knowing they can win there. They go down there now, everyone on the bus understanding the mission. Can you get back to the Garden for a game seven on Monday?
Man, this is when Tibbs got to use them Jedi mind tricks. One dribble at a time. One possession at a time. One shot at a time. And at the end of the day, when we add all those good players up, it's going to be the difference between winning and losing, living and dying. Because if I'm going to win, if I'm going to live, it's the 2 inches in front of your face. Now, R.J. Barrett, if you turn around and you look at one of your teammates, look at Julius, you're going to see a man that's willing to die for that position. Well, maybe not Julius. If you look at Brunson.
Bad example.
Bad example. Hey, if you look at Brunson, you're going to see a guy that's willing to die for that. I can't do it for you. I'm too old, and my comb over will sweat out.
Speaking of Julius, what did you say?
Hey, man, listen, he understood, you know, that words matter, and I think he understood that, hey, I better come out here and perform. And I think he did compete, and I think sometimes he had a couple of, like, mental lapses where it's just not clicking, where he just takes off in full effort. I feel like he's saving himself for possessions, and, you know, that happens when you don't know how many minutes you got to play and you don't have too much confidence in the guy behind you. Because when you have confidence in the guy out, you go 110 miles an hour like Draymond did coming out. Draymond played at a tempo and a pace that the Lakers and that those old bodies just couldn't keep up with.
That's right.
And it had nothing to do with his skill. It was just that he was playing at a different level or different speed than everybody else.
Yep.
And it forced everybody to keep up. He ran by him and it forced him to drift.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just didn't see that out of Julius. I don't know if he's capable of playing it like that. I mean, because of the injury, because maybe his condition isn't where he is. Now, we know he's a premium condition athlete. You don't play that many games if you haven't prepped your body. But I just saw a couple of times where he just really wasn't, like, he was watching a little bit. And it didn't just click.
It's a performance that was good. Way better, obviously, than what we saw in Miami. But
maybe
I wouldn't call
hopefully
it,
he's getting healthier.
But I wouldn't call it great. I mean, yes, he gets, you know, kind of poked in below the eye, and that was bothering him. He had to endure that. And I'll give him credit for that stuff. But I don't want to hear anybody tell me, like, wow, Randle really gave you a great performance. He gave you a good performance. Now, he made threes. That's huge. When he makes threes, the Knicks win. That's the bottom line. He hit four of them. So that's great. That's what you wanted to see. You wanted to see him contribute to winning. And I thought the one hustle play he did make that stood out to me was at the very end, the dagger.
Yeah,
when Mitchell Robinson missed the free throw, he hustled in from outside as there was a box-out situation. He wasn't on the block. He was outside. He ran in and was able to strip Kyle Lowry of the ball and put up an easy layup, essentially, that blocked the game up. It was over. That was a hustle play. And that's what you love to see. So it was a winning play, a big play. That mattered. But I still think there's more that he needs to give. There's more that he can give. And he still has at least one more game, if not two, to do it. That's what I'm hoping to see.
You're listening to Alan Hahn's Knicks Fix Podcast, exclusively on the ESPN New York app.
Everybody wants to talk about this, so let's do that. And let's begin with Aaron on the Upper West Side. What's happening, Aaron?
Hey, guys, thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you
guys are making me laugh the whole way home.
That's what it's all about, man. Yeah. Make you forget about how dumb that damn commute is.
Mm.
10 miles take you 2 hours.
So how you feeling, Aaron?
Hey, I love you both. Love you both so much. Alan, do you ever sleep? My goodness, I can't believe it.
Sleep is the cousin of death.
Unbelievable.
We call this dash for the cash right now, baby. You know what I'm saying? We getting that vacation money, baby. My boy getting time and a half.
Hercules.
Going to Sizzlers.
I love all these references. Bart, I love all your references. I love it. Love it, guys. Question. Actually, a statement about the win last night. It's about time the Knicks won at home and got back that home court advantage.
True.
You know, we have not had it in a long, long time. And it was a psychological win for us, you know. And, you know, in terms of the overall series, look, we went into this series with four of our top six players injured, right? In one way or another, we have no idea. Alan, maybe you know because you're there every day, but I have no idea who's really 100% between Julius, Brunson, Grimes, and now IQ is out. I mean, I just don't really know what this team is, but I'm so glad we won. And, yes, I do think we can go into Miami and send it back to the Garden for Game 7.
Oh, no doubt. Absolutely can win there. I mean, really, you argue.
Pressure's on them.
The pressure is on them, but also, again, that building, I told you, is 50-50. That's not a place you're going to and it's a house of horrors. You're not going into Hell's Den. You're going to a fairly comfortable place that you can get on your side with a good performance and especially a good start to the game that just never materialized. Now, again, Jimmy Butler's going to want to put a stop to that. They're going to have all that going on. We have not seen playoff Jimmy yet, though. I thought we were going to see him last night. I heard a lot of stuff from his side that was suggesting that he was going to shut the lights off, but he never really got going in that game.
I
love what he said. He said he called it the psychological what they got out of the game last night, the psychological aspect of it. I love that. I love what Aaron said there because he's right. The Garden never really, for a long time, as we talked about, has worked against the Knicks as a great stage and all that stuff. But I'll tell you what, man, in the playoffs, that building has been very good. It has been loud. The fans have been behind the team. It has been a really, really good atmosphere, and that's important. And, oh, by the way, did you see John Starks last night?
Yo, yeah.
Did Johnny Rocket look like he wanted to fight somebody? He was so into the game. He's like pep-talking Randall, pep-talking Brunson. He's pulling guys over. Come here, great. He's talking to him. And then he's out on the baseline, and there was one or two times like Kyle Lowry's around, and I'm like, oh, John's going to headbutt Kyle Lowry, man. Somebody better grab John. He wants to get him a jersey. He wants to get in the game and knock down some threes. You love seeing that part of it, too. The fans are one thing, but having
the alumni.
Clyde was there last night with his rings. Just to have those guys around. We saw Melo last weekend. There's just something special about that part of it, too.
Spree will.
And it was, Spree's been around. It's just, to me, I get that's a thing that we haven't really been able to enjoy is the Knicks thriving at home.
I feel like they're embracing this team because they see similarities. They're not quite there yet because they don't have the dominant big man like Patrick. These guys are proven stars. Spreewell's a proven star. When LJ came here, he was a proven star. Remember, Allen Houston was the man in Detroit. The only reason he left is because Grant Hill was a draft pick, and they had to get rid of him because Grant Hill didn't play the same position. But, they remind them they don't have the great players, the depth of great players that they have, whether you talk about Mason, Oakley, But this is a young group that can develop to that. There's going to be some additions to it along the way. Just like, you guys acquire LJ, you guys acquire Allen Houston, you guys acquire Sprewell. So they got to do some of that. But right now, this team is at the beginning of a core, right, of great players that can grow into being what that team was. Because I don't care what it is, when you ask yourself, what's a Knick, you explain what that is. We did that yesterday when we talked about what's a Jet and what's a Giant. Mm-hmm. Well, what's a Knick is a tough group that wears you down physically with big play ability, and now we can say with tremendous guard play.
For the first time in a very long time. Tino in Staten Island. Tino.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. Alan, I've been following you since your days at Newsday, so I respect everything that you do, and all the work that you do for MSG. But one thing you got to please explain to me, because I know you're on top of the Knicks, you know everything about the Knicks, and I watched maybe about 77 games this year. And the one thing that drives me crazy about the Knicks is one thing that Miami can do well. If you leave them open, they can hit a three. They have one-dimensional players. Matt Strus is a one-dimensional player. Duncan Robinson's a one-dimensional player. Why do we constantly switch on defense every single time? Grimes can defend. Why don't we just let him play one-on-one against Jimmy Butler? Jimmy shot 5-for-12 yesterday.
Yeah, I'll explain. And first of all, it's the way they're running their offense, which is an overload. So they've got Bam and Jimmy on one side of the court, and they're very difficult to guard. Obviously, you've got to pay attention to Jimmy. They're going to set screens, so your screener's going to get slowed up. He's got to fight. And they set big, nasty screens.
Yes.
They hurt you on their screens. That's a big part of this, too, to get you free. So you're chasing. You're going over the top to chase. And now you've got to get help defense. So the help has to show, and then it's a rotation of help. And you're always leaving the furthest guy away from the ball open because you figure it's going to take a minute, I can recover. And they're very good at the swing, weak side, and that's when they get their open three. It's just a strategy that is working, and it's very difficult to guard, but you have to be on point with your switching, with your rotations, and your closeouts. That you almost have to be perfect. And then you have to hope that they miss, you know, a majority of these shots that they will get.
Right.
You want the right guy, you know, taking it, which is the wrong guy for them. Now, I couldn't believe it, though. And, Tino, this is where I was bashing my head against the wall. The only guy making threes for them yesterday was Duncan Robinson.
Duncan made five. Struce made four, too.
Struce, he did. You're right. Struce, again, is part of a lot of the screening. He gets open because he gets lost in the wash. They're very good at getting him shots. But the Duncan Robinson stuff, which is the only reason why it became a game again, and Bart brought it up, it's mainly they just helped off of him, which in my mind, you've got to be thinking to yourself, who's the only guy making shots? I am not leaving him. I'd rather give up a layup than let this dude suddenly get hot from three. That is the mentality that I don't understand they don't adjust to. Who's the only one making a shot? He's not taking another shot. I am turning off that water. They don't do that, and we've seen it. I remember a game against, who was it? Minnesota. Taurean Prince, guy who doesn't really shoot a ton of threes. Did he make like 8 to 10 threes in that game? Something like that. He couldn't miss. And like all I kept thinking was, why would you ever leave him open? Like, just don't leave. Just turn off the water. But they just stick to their program. They stick to their system. This is what we're supposed to do. And if he ends up open, well, that's just the way things go. Like, hell no. Like, you've got to glue yourself to this guy and let him know, like, all right, well, your night's over. Okay, your night's over. That doesn't happen. And then, of course, you know, it leads to the frustration like Tino was explaining. But I hope that made sense in a way. I'm not trying to excuse it because it drives me crazy. But it's what Miami does that forces you to have to overload, and then it leaves the backside of the defense, the availability to get a guy open for those corner threes that I remember in game three were just absolute maddening daggers, and they were frustrating. Let's see. Let's continue with the calls. Judah in Queens. Judah.
Yo, fellas.
What's happening, man?
No, I haven't Bless called you. Up for the whole playoff series, man. I've been trying to hold it down, you know, but I'm going to get right to the point. I'm satisfied with the win, of course, because we keep the season alive. But you said something earlier, Han, and I know you was trying to give him some grace, Julius Randle. He got to go, man. Too many – I think it was you or Bart that said it, the mental lapses. Too many times, if he don't get the ball or somebody scores, he drop his head. Like, we can't have that, man. Like, Once he got poked in the eye, I said, you know what? And then I blamed Tibbs also. I said, right away, you got to watch him now. And if he make one or two plays that's kind of off, you know, he coloring out the circle, you got to pull him. And what happened? As soon as we put Obi Toppin in, he caught that spark.
That was amazing.
He caught that spark, and everybody started fighting.
The whole game flipped.
You
Judah.
Know who he is? Before I go, he's that female that got that badass body. But her attitude sucks. All she want to do is argue, and she can't cook. Got to go.
That's quite the comparison. Thank you. But it was amazing how that game flipped at the start of the second quarter when Julius went to the bench and Toppin came in, and Obi just suddenly got to a bunch of rebounds, long rebounds. He got to him because he's got length, quickness, all that stuff, and then he got an alley-oop. The building came alive. A couple of threes go down, and now all of a sudden – what looked like a team dead in the water had life. And that's what I mean by having everybody on the bus. Everybody was on the bus in this game. There's not a single guy that you look at on the box score and you say he did not have a positive impact on this game. Everybody did. You could say, well, Josh Hart got into foul trouble. What positive impact did he have on this game? That might be one guy that you could argue, but it wasn't for the lack of trying. Josh Hart is – like, you'd never question his effort. I always say he's on the bus. He's just in one right now with foul trouble that he's got to figure out. But Hartenstein, Toppin, Grimes, Mitchell Robinson, Barrett, Brunson. And then, yes, even at times making threes. That three with 0.6 seconds left at halftime, don't just shake that off like no big deal. That was an important shot that gets you into halftime with a lead and with confidence. Those are moments that matter. And so everybody was on the bus. And all you want to see now in Miami is that everybody's still on the bus. And there's a way to drive that bus back to the Garden for a Game 7. Okay, thank you for listening to this latest episode of the Knicks Fix podcast. Enjoy the games. And as always, for more Knicks coverage, be sure to tune in to the Barton Hahn Show weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
You're listening to Alan Hahn's Knicks Fix podcast, exclusively on the ESPN New York app.